This is Kelly Blewett. My guest tonight is Anne Valente. Her fiction appears and is forthcoming in One Story, Ninth Letter, Hayden's Ferry Review, and The Normal School, and her essays appear in The Believer and Washington Post. Her work was also selected as notable in Best American Non-Required Reading 2011. In addition to all of this, Anne has a chapbook out that's called An Elegy to Mathematics, and her new short story collection, which we will be discussing, is By Light We Knew Our Names Stories. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We thought that you might just begin by reading a little passage from the book, and this is actually the very first page.
This is the first story, which is entitled Latchkey, so I'm just going to go ahead and read the first paragraph or so, which is the first page. Sasha's birthday fell on a Wednesday, and though her parents gave her a present, its string and paper meant to be torn away at once, almost 10 days have passed and still she has not opened it. They wrapped it in paisley paper, tied a bright purple string around its corners, and hoped she would pull all the casings away, just after she blew out the 7 candles on her frosted yellow cake. But when Sasha blew hard across the sugared flowers, her cheeks puffed like globes, her mother made her close her eyes, placed the gift in her hands. And when Sasha opened them and looked down, she only said, "I love it," her voice a low whistle, and set it aside on the carpet fully wrapped. "Don't you want to open it?" her mother asked. But Sasha said no, and her mother looked at her father over Sasha's small head. Then Sasha said it again, that she loved it as it was, and her father cut the cake and gave his daughter the corner piece, the one with the most frosting, as she always liked.
I'm glad that you read that part because so much about the collection as a whole comes out there, the love that the parents have for the little girl, but also the way that that present represents something for Sasha that she does not want to ruin it by opening it.
Absolutely. I feel like that's a tension that sort of carries through the whole story, and it's tough. I mean, it seems like the central conflict of a story being that whether this child opens a present or doesn't open a present seems almost too small, I think, to consider even for a story. But something about that tension of leaving things unopened and leaving things undiscovered, especially on the brink of childhood and maybe possibly entering into adolescence, seems like a really interesting point of tension for me.
It reminded me of Henry James, actually, and the idea that the unopened letter or the untold secret is the richest one of all.
Yes.
And yet this little girl sort of knew that intuitively, you know, opening that present is going to be one more change as she gets older. It's a birthday present.
Right. I think some of those liminal spaces, I guess, are at play in a lot of the stories in this collection, whether it's between childhood and adulthood, a variety of other, I guess, borders or boundaries, I guess, that I've been thinking of a little bit. But I think that tension of what's not necessarily known and what can remain unknown follows through the collection.
And you really represent that tension in an object. And I noticed one of the reviewers of this collection said that in this book, feelings manifest as objects. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about why you did that.
Sure. There's obviously quite a bit of magic in the stories, which kind of follows the trend of magic realism. And I've been thinking about this, too, just in terms of how that relates to the process of research or just tangible things, tangible evidence and facts. And I think something about that is really interesting to me, just of these tangible objects and how that manifests as feelings, that objects are so concrete, but feelings are so intangible. So I think that the tension between those two becomes really interesting to me, of looking at emotional spaces and tough spaces like grief and love through something very tangible as a present, and whether or not to open it.
And I think it enables you to have a certain remove from having to describe the feeling too deeply or in language. You know, language can kind of fall short.
Yes.
But almost by describing the object, it's like we're getting closer to this emotion, the emotional quality.
As a writer and as an author, I think I struggle with that all of the time, that there are certain words that you can put together on a page and it can be as descriptive as possible. But really what you're getting at is those objects, more or less, of what you're describing, and trying to find ways of describing those objects as best as you can in order to get at something that is not sayable.
I like this story, the opening that you read, too, because of the parent-child dynamic. And I noticed that you dedicated this book to your own parents. I wondered if you could speak a little bit to that theme that seems across many of the stories.
You know, this, as my first collection, it feels like this is most definitely a book that came out of not only my childhood, but just out of a sense of wonder, a sense of curiosity. And I think my parents did a wonderful job of instilling me with that as I was growing up. But, you know, I grew up in a very loving household, too. In some of my training, I guess, in fiction writing, I think the idea is that you always write sort of difficult stories where people don't like each other or people don't love each other, even, and you're getting at conflict, I guess, in that sense. So I guess one of my tasks in this book was to see what conflicts are there, even in situations of extreme love and support and in loving relationships between parents and children.
And I like how you talked about love being at the center of the book, because that's something so heartwarming about these stories. And as you know, because we talked about this before, the story Terrible Angels just really moved me. And I wondered if you could share just a little bit of sort of the setup to that and the role that love plays in that story in particular.
Sure. In that particular story, which is essentially about a teenage girl who's lost her mother and she's living with her father, and her grandparents just keep reappearing.
But they shouldn't be appearing.
But they shouldn't be appearing. Yes, they are deceased grandparents, so they keep appearing as ghosts in different places, but they're also leaving her tangible objects like grappling hooks, things that they sort of gave her when she was a child. So, you know, in terms of that kind of love, this is most definitely not an autobiographical story in any sense of the word. But I was thinking about my grandparents a bit while writing that and just what growing up with that kind of love meant with them and also with my parents, and how that sort of, as we were talking about already, sort of manifests in these tangible objects.
A pail of chalk.
Yes, a pail of chalk.
I mean, as a mom with young children, my home is littered with the objects that are described in this book. And to see them carrying such narrative weight was something that really distinguished this collection for me.
Thank you.
I wondered if you had a favorite story. There are 13 stories included in the collection, and they're all sort of about the same length. They feel comparable. Is there one that really means more to you?
That's a good question. Now, I don't know that I'd say I have a favorite, but I think I gravitate towards the stories that required more research. And for me, I don't know that that makes them more fully fleshed or fully formed stories. I think it just means that those were more fun for me to write, that I got to research a certain component of history or biology or nature that I didn't know much about beforehand. So I guess a good test case of that is the story Dear Amelia, which is about a group of girls who are finding themselves turning into bears as they are watching Amelia Earhart try to complete her transatlantic flight. So that allowed me a lot of different opportunities to research and learn more about things I didn't know about Amelia Earhart's life, her planes, where all the stops that she made along her route, but also bear anatomy.
Yes.
There are lobsters in that story, too, because the girls are trappers. So
in Maine.
In Maine. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So a landscape as well. So I got to do a lot of research in a lot of different pockets for that story.
I think that story is especially impressive. And wasn't that chosen by the author of The Family Fang? And I can't quite remember.
Kevin Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah. Won Copper Nichols Fiction Prize in 2012. So I love him. I think he's wonderful. So it meant a lot to me that he picked that story.
Definitely. And, you know, the thing that's resonant to me is that even though that's a foreign scene in the sense that we don't live in the time of Amelia Earhart. We're in Cincinnati, Ohio. We're not in Maine. We're not turning into bears. However, the emotional core of sort of being a woman and looking at a really successful woman and feeling like maybe that's a role model, maybe if that woman makes that flight, that means something for me.
Yeah. And I think that was sort of the core of that fascination with me. It's just considering the time in which she was making those flights and how different things were then as to how they are now. I just couldn't imagine, or tried to imagine, I guess, in this fiction, what it would have been like for an adolescent girl to watch this happen and try to imagine what it would be like to be in that plane flying across.
That's right. You mentioned bears and lobsters in that story, but those aren't the only animal friends included in this collection.
Yes. Animals appear quite a bit.
Pink dolphins.
Right.
Giraffes. Why bring those in?
Animals have always been fascinating to me. I feel like I've always been the person who is the adult at the zoo without children. I know that the notion of being curious about animals and animal biology and behavior is something that I guess we target towards kids, but I just find them and their behavior fascinating in a variety of different ways. ways, I guess, that they are different from us, but also ways that they are unique and separate.
Yeah, and as one parting gift to our listeners, I'll mention that you have a list of young adult books that should be read by adults, young adult books for adults, which is really how we can understand By Light We Knew Our Names. Did it run on the Huffington Post
website? It did, yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yes, and I know it's been getting some discussion, so listeners who are interested should look that up. Anne Valente on the Huffington Post about young adult books that are really meant for adults. So
right.
Thank you so much for being with us, Anne.
Thank you so much. This is a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. And you can find out more about Anne's book, By Light We Knew Our Names, by looking at our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Kelly Blewett.